Welcome to the Queen City Preachers Podcast. I'm Pastor Andrew.
And I'm Pastor Molly.
And we're here at Messiah Lutheran Church in Marquette, Michigan. Thanks for joining us today.
We're here indeed.
We are. The sun is shining. It's crisp, but yeah. You know, spring feels like it's on the way. The molds are out. Allergies are going.
I know.
It's great.
It is. It's rough.
Sign of life.
Yes.
Abundance.
We've sprung forward into the... that thing, you know.
Daylight savings time.
Yes.
Oh, that thing. That which shall not be named. It's like Voldemort from Harry Potter.
No,
it's like,
I just couldn't remember what it was
Let's
called.
Let's not talk about daylight savings. No.
It's really throwing me off this week. I've been really tired after that.
It is. I find it amazing how much that hour messes with our systems and the cycles of our rhythms. Mm-hmm. Circadian rhythm or whatever they call it. But like it's really powerful. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting thing about that. I mean, and thinking about what that means to spring, it's really interesting thinking about what that means in Lent. Like during the middle of Lent, we lose an hour of sleep, right?
Yeah.
You know, that time that we think about self-reflection, about sacrifice, about suffering.
Sacrificing that hour maybe, on a Sunday.
Yeah, maybe whoever chose daylight savings time, it wasn't really about agriculture and industry. It was all about suffering.
Okay.
No?
Yeah, that's a
theory. All right, all right.
It feels kind of conspiracy theory, but
yeah, well,
you know.
Well, we are going to talk about, you know, organized religion and cult formation today, right?
Yeah.
So,
still thinking about those cults. Or as Pastor Andrew calls them, cults.
Sorry. My cultish language is more horsey. But that's okay. And we get the passage today that we get to wrestle with too is, it's kind of a hot mess of two stories smashed together, two different passages in John. They're right next to each other, but they kind of jive. They kind of struggle. It's a little bit of a mess. Mm-hmm. So I think we're gonna read these passages. We'll dive into it. We'll talk a little bit about colts, not horses, but kind of see where our conversation leads us today.
Who knows? We will see.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so we are in John chapter 12, and we're beginning with verse 20. Now, among those who went up to worship at the festival were some Greeks. They came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida in Galilee, and said to him, "Sir, we wish to see Jesus." Philip went and told Andrew. Then Andrew and Philip went and told Jesus. And Jesus answered them, "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Very truly, I tell you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. Those who love their life lose it, and those who hate their life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, there will my servant be also. Whoever sees me, the Father will honor. Now my soul is troubled, and what should I say? Father, save me from this hour? No, it is for this reason that I have come to this hour. Father, glorify your name." Then a voice came from heaven. "I have glorified it, and I will glorify it again." The crowd standing there heard it and said that it was thunder. Others said, "An angel has spoken to him." Jesus answered, "This voice has come for your sake, not for mine. Now is the judgment of this world. Now the ruler of this world will be driven out. And I, when I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all people to myself." He said this to indicate the kind of death he was to die. Well, Jesus, that's a long response to hearing that some Greeks were here to see you.
Totally. Yeah, if we all did that, people would just be like, wow, all right, thanks.
Went on a bit of a tangent there.
Yeah, a little bit of a rabbit hole there, Jesus. Yeah, so I think it's helpful to place this in the context in John, because Jesus's rabbit hole in John, this entire section comes right after the triumphal entry in John. Mm-hmm. So we've already entered into essentially the passion narrative
yeah.
in John's gospel. Mm-hmm. So most of us would associate some of this with Holy Week. Mm-hmm. And here we are getting it a few weeks before that. We're not there yet, but it's coming. And so just I think that's helpful because in some ways, at least it's helpful for me because it reminds me of what is the purpose of John's storytelling at this point? Mm-hmm. Where is he taking us?
Yeah. The reiteration of what's going to happen.
Right.
The kind of the marching on to the cross. Right. And the part that we missed before this, right, is, like you said, the triumphal entry, but then it's also the Pharisees proclaiming to one another, you see, you can do nothing. Look, the world has gone after him.
Oh, which is really interesting, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, you can't do anything because everybody's following Jesus.
Yeah, it's like, what are we going to do now to change public opinion, right? Because we know all the things about the Pharisees and, you know, wanting to get rid of Jesus because Jesus is threatening their way of life and their power and authority and all of those types of things. And now they're in kind of this predicament. They're like, what are we going to do now? Everybody's following Jesus. They essentially believe in him, right?
Yeah, I totally. So in my head, I've shared this before. I kind of have a musical memory. Like I often associate things with songs, but like I think about Jesus Christ Superstar and Caiaphas. You know, the bass singing and saying, no, wait, we need a more permanent solution, mm-hmm. right? Like
to get rid of Jesus.
We have to figure this out. And mm-hmm. and how do we figure this out? This isn't an easy thing, right? And that's already starting right there mm-hmm. In this. And so I think that's a really powerful, really powerful thing to point out.
Yeah.
And to know that. That in John, this is a movement that has energy. Mm-hmm. This isn't just a ragtag team. This is something that is seriously threatening.
Mm-hmm. Even the greater Greeks are order. Following him.
Right. Mm-hmm. This is threatening everything that the leadership understands as the norm. Mm-hmm. It's threatening the very foundations of their ideals and their identity. We think about that, like Mark points out that that's theological. John, I think in some ways points out that it's very theological, but it's also systemic. I think Mark does that too, but like mm-hmm. that we're tossing things on its, I mean, it's kind of like the table turning mm-hmm. from a few weeks back that we're seeing these questions of how things operate in this sense of norm and a belief of who God is and how God functions in our community and what that means that government's role is.
Yeah.
And John is saying, no. And Mark does that too, but in a different way, which I think actually is a really great segue when we dive into talking about cults, because it's a really interesting question related to how we understand the difference between religion mm-hmm. and kind of an ideological following that becomes problematic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it connects. So, and I hadn't noticed this before too, right? With they really should have included that verse about the Pharisees because it begins and then bookends the part about the leader of this world will be driven out when
totally.
Jesus is lifted up pretty perfectly, right? Because that's
exactly
what they're fearful of.
They're fearful that the leadership that they understand that they have control over mm-hmm. is going away.
The powers of this world and the whole idea. And so here's the part about the cults, right? Because cults offer like a different way of life and they're trying to sell you something that is kind of countercultural to where people are living currently, right, in this world.
Which fits our understanding of religion in many ways, right?
It is
countercultural.
That's where I kind of like get like, well, like you get kind of scared. I've been really paranoid the past couple of weeks that I've accidentally joined cults. And because it is, right? It's kind of a slippery slope. And so, but I want to look first, kind of putting the cult aside for a second, about how, because you say that, and about how it's the countercultural thing, right? It's offering something different.
It is.
And so I want us to look at the kind of passages, because there's lots of verses within this passage that are very kind of like insidery, jargony language,
which is very John.
Jesus is saying something, but it's not really what he's saying, but it's pointing to something else. And we get that. And so I think it might be challenging for folks who aren't on the inside. I wonder what the crowds around them, if they were like, okay, cool, Jesus. Like, what are you talking about? We don't understand. Like the disciples don't even understand. And Jesus has told them many times what is literally going to happen to him. So,
yeah, and this is, and so there's an important distinction to make here, because in John, Gnosticism is kind of present in the backdrop of that. And Gnosticism is this notion that there's this hidden knowledge that is attainable, mm-hmm. and that that hidden knowledge leads to salvation, mm-hmm. right? So that truth. And so in John, you can read that there's this mystery and understanding that needs to be found, right? And so that in some ways fits into this. But John is not fully Gnostic, because the hiddenness that John is speaking to is a greater truth that is who Christ is and who God is. And it's also not really all that well hidden. John uses imagery a lot, mm-hmm. and the disciples don't get it, and sometimes we don't get it. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when you start unpacking it, it's kind of like, oh, all right. And oftentimes we get these moments where these images are set up to try to help us understand John's theological constructs within our own world, right? Mm-hmm. Light and dark, images of agriculture, images of food, images of like all these different pieces of trying to help us see. And here we get this notion of the grain of wheat falling to the earth, mm-hmm. right? And it dies and it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit.
Yeah. And so it's interesting looking at that phrase, because in, you know, there's all the death and the life stuff, and it's obviously an allusion in part to Jesus dying and rising again, right? And bearing much fruit in the power that Jesus will have over death, right? In the resurrection.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But then there's also this connection between what will happen to Jesus, what Jesus will do, and it gets a little convoluted when we wonder, well, is that what we do also, right? This kind of dying, right? And in connection to the next passage, in the next verses, right? Those who love their life lose it, and those who hate their life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Last Sunday, Pastor Andrew gave us all the different descriptions of what life can mean.
Right, the three different Greek mm-hmm. terms, bio, yeah. psyche, zoe.
Zoe, yep. And so this one is the psyche, right?
This is psyche. Yeah, this is psyche. One. So this is self. This is how we would say our understanding of meaning, mm-hmm. right? And man, is that powerful in this context, right? Because in some ways, if we let that self die,
yeah.
if we let how we understand meaning, the notions that we ascribe to self, ego, blah, 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 right? Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden, a different life is offered.
Yes.
And, or in the seed imagery, there is fruitfulness rather than just death.
Mm-hmm.
I think that metaphor translates over too in this mm-hmm. passage. So mm-hmm. it's really interesting.
Yeah.
There's a lot to play with in that and a lot to chew on.
Yeah. And so here's what I was thinking of, especially with thinking about the cult. So, all right. So we briefly touched on this last week where I got really into the Vow, which is this HBO documentary on the Nexium cult. And if you're trying to look it up, the Nexium is like NXVIVM. It's like spelled with like the
great Roman numerals.
Yeah, it's
or
silly.
Something. It's weird.
It's silly.
Yeah.
That should have been people's first sign.
Oh, man.
But okay, so here's my little rabbit hole. But like the way the documentary is set up is so like, I think it's such a great explanation for us in general and like us as people, and even thinking back to people following Jesus, that we are always kind of searching for something. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of seeking out these ways for life and to make life better. And lots of cults begin as that. And the Nexium cult was no different. It was like they called it like the executive success program. So it was like the idea that you could sign up for these courses and kind of put behind you the things that were holding you back and generally make yourself a better person. And it was all wrapped up within like ethics and making the world a better place. Like it sounded great. Like I like watched the first episode and was like, well, I'd sign up for that.
Yeah.
But it costs a lot of money. So probably not. But the idea behind it is like, it sounds good, right? Like, it sounds
absolutely.
It
yeah.
sounds like a great idea and a hopeful idea. And you know, then it kind of it went on a bit of a downward spiral after that one, which it becomes this, it becomes a cult when the people can't leave, when the community in which you have signed up to be a part is your only community and your only connections. And
focuses around one individual.
Yes. And so the scary individual in this cult is the Keith Raniere guy. And he becomes this kind of very controlling, manipulative character within the narrative of the documentary and the story. And kind of, you know, kind of seeing how far people will go to follow him as this. He calls himself like a scientist, but he functions very differently within the cult as like this guru and leader.
Okay.
To where he is the point where if people get to him, then they can be kind of enlightened and see the light. And so you see all these connections between kind of the stuff in John, right? And the Gnosticism and the knowing.
Which is a heresy, by the way. I'm going to reiterate that.
Yeah.
It's a heresy.
Don't
the church has disavowed that.
The new church maybe was afraid of the cults too. Like Gnostics can lead to cults. But then it, like, I know in the media, it's taught, this Nexium cult is talked about like as a sex cult, but that was like a really small part of it. It's bad and not good, but because like to get to the knowledge, there was like this whole group of women that were kind of being manipulated into having sex with him. So yikes. But yeah, you can see how it starts out as something good, though, and then it kind of like unravels into something bad. And I was thinking about this text. Where was I going with this? I was thinking about this text in the sense of like this searching for something alternative, right? Because that is kind of what Jesus is laying out here. I think when he talks about life and when we think about our life and our souls and, you know, the way that the world kind of advertises life to us and what life means and how that is very different than what Jesus is offering up and even what the cult, right, is offering up, right? They're not offering up life in a way that is going to bear much fruit. The fruit is bared for the person who's at the head.
And I think that that's one of the things that I think is really powerful about naming this is that there's a yearning in every one of us for something different, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you think about it in different times of our lives, that yearning is stronger or different in certain ways. But I think that the difference, one of the most powerful pieces that is different, I was thinking about understanding of cults this morning. And I was thinking that like one of the big differences is almost a difference between some of our Old Testament theology and our New Testament theology, which is a difference between what is the purpose of worship? The purpose is to glorify God, but the purpose of our behavior is towards one another, not towards one individual. That God's request is of what we do for how we treat each other. Mm-hmm. And that in part shows how we love God.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a cultish personality or world would say, you do this to show me devotion, mm-hmm. right? Which in some ways comes to those sacrifices that occur in Leviticus and in some of the Old Testament theology that looks at focusing on doing it for one for the sake of the self or community. And here it's doing it for the sake of, in some ways, when we expound on Jesus's theology and God's and the theology of grace that we hear beyond this passage,
mm-hmm.
that it's about how we understand what we do for each other. That glorifying Jesus is also bound in the great commandment of loving one another and loving God, and so that's one of the big differences. Is that the focus? While it's exciting to see a life that is different, the difference of life is not just what Jesus offers in the future,
mm-hmm.
but what Jesus says, you can live a different way now,
mm-hmm.
but it's going to involve how your relationships are with one another.
Yeah, it's for the sake of the world, right? And that's going back to the John 3:16.
It is.
Right?
Totally.
Come to the redemption of the world, where many cults are, like even the Nexium one, is a self-help cult, right?
Yeah.
Where it's about you. And even though at the beginning, right, what sounds so great is the idea of changing the world and making the world a better place, like that's a fallacy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it, mm-hmm. it, and when you become so insulated and insular, it it's no longer about caring about changing the world. It's about preserving what you have on the inside of your cult and even within your small cult community.
Right. And that's a distinction to make too, because like I think that all of us come to worship in some ways for ourselves. Mm-hmm. That we need a relationship with God. We need community. Mm-hmm. And that's an important thing to name, that we do need that. Mm-hmm. But when that is all that it is, when it's all about that, or about that need being met then glorifies somebody else or the needs of a community, mm-hmm. Then it becomes narrower and narrower, yeah. Right?
But we have to name
that it is okay.
Yeah.
Selfishness is not bad inherently.
No, and needing things from Jesus isn't bad either. And Jesus names that in this text, right? When we hear Jesus is troubled and, you know, being like, what should I say? Father, save me from this hour. Like, no, John's Jesus always knows best, right? As opposed to some of the other gospel Jesuses, which we see struggle a little bit more with what is going to happen to him. But John's Jesus knows best and says, Father, glorify your name. And then the voice from heaven comes and says, I have glorified it. I will glorify it again. And the crowd's like, what is happening here? You know, was that thunder? Was that an angel? And Jesus says, it's for your sake.
Yeah.
Right? It is because of your need that this is coming. It is coming to this hour.
Yeah.
Right? And that
totally.
That flips the whole
powerful.
Script right
it
there.
It does. Well, and I also think that like tie that with the previous one of whoever serves me, the Father will honor, but then unpack what does serve Jesus mean, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not, you're not being a slave
You're
to
not
Jesus.
Being a slave to Jesus. It's that, you know, clothing the naked, feeding the hungry, visiting those in prison, mm-hmm. Loving our neighbor, right? Yep. It's building on that. And so put
for
those,
the redemption of
right.
the world.
So put those two pieces together and mm-hmm. all of a sudden we have a bigger image.
A bigger holistic image of, yeah, what it means.
Of what it means to follow mm-hmm. Soon a crucified God in John's gospel, right? I mean, like that is where we are heading, mm-hmm. Is to the cross.
Yes. And to give your life to that, right? Going back even further, right?
Yeah.
Giving your life to this ideology, this way of following God and of following Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that this is really, you know, this touches on so much in so many ways, and we could probably spend hours talking about this, because I think that one of the things that this touches on is how we understand community and grace. Mm-hmm. Because I think that in some ways, we hear so much in white Christian America parlance, right? And I say that using kind of this notion of Protestant evangelical together, not setting them up, but like of personal salvation.
Yeah, where it's all about you and your personal relationship with your Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
As individuals, right? Mm-hmm. Have you been saved? And there's an element of personal in all strains of Christian theology, because it involves us deeply. But in Lutheran theology especially, my salvation is bound into the salvation of others, that grace is a gift for the community. It is for the world. It is beyond me as an individual. And that's also bound up in how we understand our role in society. It means that we work together. We don't work as individuals. It's why the church exists. It's why our denomination exists. It's why we have ecumenical relationships and work with others, is because we know that this is not about us alone. Mm-hmm. That this is bigger than that. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really important, because in so many ways we hear the narrative over and over in our society of personal salvation, mm-hmm. but that is not ultimately, I personally believe it's not what the Gospels actually are teaching us theologically about what God desires of us, and it's not what our faith, what our tradition teaches either.
Yeah. And I think it's good to look at that in context too of when we talk about the servant, right? Jesus comes to serve us. Right. And that is
which we'll get next week, by the way, in Philippians, the Passion Sunday, Christ him in chapter 2. Christ took the form of the slave, emptying himself,
yes,
right, for us.
But I think in the whole notion of salvation and your relationship with Jesus and asking, have you been saved, the question behind that that happens and that I think we first jump to in many more evangelical contexts is that, what have I done to be saved?
Right.
When the whole notion is,
what has God done for
Jesus
us?
Jesus has come to do this for you. It has already been done.
And now, right? What are we going to do because of it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and that is so wrapped up in the idea of a gift, right? You don't have to do anything to receive a gift from somebody. And when you're beginning to do something to receive a gift, then it no longer becomes a gift.
Yeah. There is no earning our way.
Yeah.
And that's another distinction between cults, right?
Mm-hmm.
A cult has so many levels of earning,
mm-hmm.
right? It's why Scientology is considered a cult.
Yeah.
Is because it's about earning different levels of, and that it's adding more and more and more, and the cost. And but, and for us, that's not how we understand God.
Mm-hmm.
That God's gift has already been given, and now the question is, okay, so if it's been given, what's asked of us?
Mm-hmm.
It's to take on that notion of being a servant because we've been freed to do so.
Yeah.
Right.
And if there is anything that we have to give up. When I'm thinking like about the giving up of the self, right?
Yeah.
It's so entwined and wrapped up in this idea that, well, that is something that is good for us. Because when I think we give up our self, our soul, or one of the other phrases that you had used when we were talking about the what is the real definition of that life word there, you said ego too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think maybe that hits a little bit more home for all of us, right? We give up the things that we think make us whole or give us life or, you know, complete our personhood, but they really don't.
Yeah, the things that we have adopted as defining our lives,
mm-hmm.
right?
And we give those up to Jesus for a different definition of life that does truly bring life and wholeness, right? And that life is bound up in that gift of life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that I often think about in relationship to identity is, how do I identify myself?
Mm-hmm.
So often our identity relies in this Western notion of society, relies on vocation,
mm-hmm.
right? On what we do.
How
much you earn, your job, right?
Yeah.
And so... So when we introduce ourselves that way. Hi, I'm Andrew. I'm a pastor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, hi, I'm Andrew. I'm a husband.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a community member.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a son. I'm a brother. I'm a friend.
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes make art.
Mm-hmm.
I try to exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, I'm Andrew. I'm a follower of Jesus,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah. I'm like, Andrew. I'm a beloved child of God. Yeah.
How do we actually understand? Because in reality, to claim the beloved child of Godness is to claim a relationship,
mm-hmm.
right? Instead of it being transactional about who we are by what we do,
earned, right?
It's about who we are based on whose we are,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And I'd include that in whose we are in our earthly relationships, right? And
mm-hmm.
in our connections of friends, of colleagues, of family,
mm-hmm.
but primarily in whose we are in relationship to God.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so when we lose ourself, what do we gain? We gain that belovedness. We can claim that in a freshness that is hard to do when we cling to our egos and our mm-hmm. self identities in other ways.
So I wonder if, I think when we think about that last phrase, now is the judgment of the world. Now the ruler of this world will be driven out. I wonder if Jesus is talking about that in a more existential way, right? The things
Ooh.
That have ruled us are being driven out.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
And that a new ruler has come, when people will finally see the truth of it when Jesus is lifted up, right? And everyone will be drawn.
And can we let that, A, can we see that?
Mm-hmm.
But B, can we make the space for that to happen?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Because I think we so get caught up with that, with like Jesus being the king and getting rid of like, and then we get concerned about like political figures and the Antichrist. And, you know, it goes down that slippery slope, right? Yeah,
feudal systems.
But when we look at it as a more inward in what has been being currently, because driven in this context isn't like a one-time kind of situation. It's like an active word that is constantly happening.
I love how Greek does that.
So what is being driven out within us? What is ruling us that is being driven out so that Jesus can take that place in our relationship, right? That relational love with Jesus can take that place.
Yeah. Yeah. And in some ways, this ties right back to last week's sermon and the question of what is the life we're trying to lead?
Mm-hmm.
Can we receive life as a grace? Can we receive Zoe? Can we acknowledge that Jesus offers us that,
mm-hmm.
which is so countercultural to this notion of life as psyche, as meaning-making, as ego, as this, which is important, right? I'm not going to discount that. Same with bios and our biological lives. Those are important. But can we make space to acknowledge that there's a life that has been given to us,
mm-hmm.
right?
A greater purpose.
A greater purpose.
Yeah.
Can we find a way to let that be driven? I mean, in some ways, to drive us. And what do we have to set aside to do that? That's kind of the Lenten question, right? Mm-hmm. How do we make space?
Mm-hmm.
What has to be let go of?
Yep.
Or what has to be taken on? And in this case, how do we allow that space for that to occur? But often it's hard to add more things or to do that without actually letting go of other things.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So I think that's a great question to leave people with.
Yeah, I'll be chewing on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So thanks for being with us today, journeying down our little rabbit hole of cultishness. And you know, by the way, if you have deep questions and you're listening to this and you'd love to hear us engage something, shoot us a note, drop us a line.
If you've been going down deep dives like I have, like Princess Diana and now cults.
Yeah, but let us know what dive you've been in. not dive bar, hopefully. Please stay safe, people. But at the same time, we'd be curious as you wrestle with questions too. But thank you for going on the journey with us, because it's really interesting. I hope that you you find it as interesting as we do to weave some of the questions that come in our daily lives with the texts as they come to us too.
We really hope you find it as interesting as we do.
And if you don't, we hope that you at least laugh and roll your eyes along with us.
That's okay.
So thanks for being with us today. You've been listening to the Queen City Preachers podcast. I'm Pastor Andrew.
And I'm Pastor Molly.
Be well, friends.